You know, the online world is great for so many things. It's great for making you laugh, it's great for entertainment, and every now and again you come across ideas or people that literally blow your mind. But I still think some of our best thinking happens offline. So join me, Nessa, on Offline Thoughts as I chat about some of the things I think about when I'm not online. I'm really glad you're listening, and I hope you enjoy the episode. So in today's episode, I wanted to talk about the reasons why we spend money and specifically how we spend money to make us feel important or to make us feel like we matter or to make us feel like, insert whatever positive emotions, but they're usually connected to feeling valuable, important, worthy, significant, like you matter. It's around those feelings, different adjectives, but if you trace down the root of those different adjectives, usually it's to make us feel like we matter. I thought about it because over the weekend, I drove to this place called Dulwich and BTW. I just got my license like 2 weeks ago. So when I said I will drive anywhere, I will literally drive anywhere. So I found this pot online, this large pot for my garden, because I'm doing a lot of planting and I plant loads of things over the summer. And this year I was like, I'm just not going to buy like brand new terracotta pots anymore. I just want to try and buy them either secondhand or find them for free on places like Gumtree where they, you know, people post things they want to give away. So I found this pot online anyway, and this woman was like, come and pick it up on Sunday at 5:30. You're totally welcome to it. And she gave me her address. So I end up roping my partner in to come with me and we drive to the location. It's about a 35, 40 minutes drive from my house. And I had never been to Dulwich before, but my partner had said that it's a nice area. But in my head, like her nice and my nice are different. Like, not to throw shade, but she grew up in the south side of London. So like, I will just say that the places that she thinks are nice, I don't automatically always think that the places are nice. So in my head, I was like, okay, yeah, whatever. It's going to be like, okay. So we end up getting to the place and it is beautiful. Like it is so gorgeous. So, you know, I stand corrected. We're driving up and automatically, you know, you're in a nicer area because automatically you start to see like green spaces. Like you start to see like little parks and you start to see like more trees. You start to see more expensive trees. I always notice this. Like you start to see like nicer trees. It's not just like, you know, those trees that don't have a lot of leaves or they're not that interesting or they're not that big. Like they tend to be like huge trees that are making statements. Also, you tend to see, of course, that the houses are nicer. Instead of you seeing like two cars parked outside the house, you might see one car and it kind of implies that the house isn't split into two and two tenants occupy it, because that's what they've done in London. Like back in the day, one family might have owned like a whole house, and then what they've done is they've divided that house into two, and literally sometimes you see like a line going down the middle of the house with like two different colors painted on either side of that line, and that denotes that it's two different occupiers. So you know you're in a nicer part of town when that line is not there, and that basically means that the person or the family owns the whole property. So we're in that kind of neighborhood, like they own the whole property, not just half, not just a property that had been divided into two. Also, like you tend to see like nicer cars. So you go from seeing like secondhand beat up cars or like average cars to like nice Porsches, like really nice Audis, really nice Range Rovers, and of course, lots and lots and lots of Teslas. That's what in the UK, it's like the status symbol car. It's like the Tesla. So I'm seeing all of this. Then my partner is also giving me a history lesson on like some of the schools in the area. There's like this one girl's school that the tuition is like £20,000 a semester or something outrageous. All of this to say that it's a nice area. Also, there's like lots of like little vegan cafes. I went in to buy like a cinnamon bun. I paid like £4, which is crazy in London. They were selling smoothies for like £7, which again is crazy for London. A smoothie is like £3.50, shall we say. Even in like really fancy places, smoothies are like £4. So the fact that this was like £6.50, some of them were £7.50, it tells you something about the area. So anyway, we end up like rocking up to the place. We arrived like half an hour early and I didn't want to go and knock because she said 5:30. So I just wanted to show up at 5:30. As we're sitting in the car, we're chatting about the area and we're talking about mostly how we have to live in a nice area like that when we're older. and talking about like what career, like what we have to change in our lives and our careers to be able to afford to live in a place like that. And as it gets to the 5:30 mark, go up to the house and collect the pot. And the woman, by the way, like in my heart, like on the one hand, she had a Tesla outside. So anybody who knows anything like about my dislikes, they know the top of the list of that dislike outside Bill Gates is like Tesla and Elon and anything related to Elon Musk and Teslas. So automatically I was like, this is a nice area, but I also probably think she's probably not a nice human being because she owns a Tesla in this climate. And on top of that, she's the kind of person who would buy a Tesla, which says a lot of things to me, which I will talk about in the episode. But to my surprise, she's completely nice. Like, she is so lovely. She's so down to earth. She's so sweet. Like, completely loveliest pie woman. But the longer I started thinking about, like, the house and the car, like, sometimes, like, things stand out to me. Like, I can't quite work out what doesn't mesh together. And I think what doesn't mesh to me, I guess, is sometimes you will see something and you will like the thing but realize that it doesn't fit the context. So think about, for example, when you go to like poor people's homes, and you will see that they have like a massive TV screen. So in your head it's kind of like, it's weird because it's a poorer household but they have like a massive TV that doesn't fit their context. Or for example, you will see, one of the things I see now in London all the time is you will see taxi drivers who are driving Teslas. And in my head, those two things don't go together because one, often they're super, super like really protective of the car. Like they don't want you scratching anything. They're like, I'll close the door. God forbid you're drunk and they're like concerned that you're going to get sick in their car. Like you can just tell like their whole physical being is hyper aware of the damage that their passengers may cause to their Teslas, to their cars. So for me, that context doesn't make sense because if you're so hyper aware and hyper afraid that the car might be damaged, it obviously implies that you can't afford the car. Also, for me, it doesn't make sense to be, on the one hand, somebody who is earning an hourly wage in the sense that obviously you're earning money per passenger that you take. So let's say you take a passenger like 15 minutes away and it costs like £12. It doesn't make sense that you're earning like £12 in like an hour, but you're driving a vehicle that's worth like £50,000 to £60,000. For me, the context doesn't make sense. Not that there's anything inherently wrong with owning any car. It's just that for this particular person and their particular life and their particular context, it clearly doesn't make sense. Or for example, in everyday life, when you see people who are just living way beyond their means, like you might know how much money they make, but you might see them living a lifestyle that is way outside of that. And typically it's financed by debt. And so you know they're taking on consumer debt or other forms of debt to be able to afford their lifestyle, whether it's being able to afford a car or being able, like even just like buying stuff, like people who buy things on Klarna, which is like a pay in three app where you, let's say you buy like £500 worth of clothes, you can pay off that £500 in three lots. But if you have to pay things off in three lots, it means you can't afford those things. So it's like you're wearing clothes and living a lifestyle that you can't afford because you have to pay for it in three. So again, it's like not the thing itself, it's not the clothes, it's that it doesn't fit the person's context. So when I was at this lady's house, I felt that as well. I felt like on the one hand, she lives in a really nice part of town, in a really nice neighborhood with all those beautiful trees, those manicured, like, I wouldn't say manicured front gardens because it wasn't the type of neighborhood where they had like large driveways. It was like a little itty bitty driveway that just had enough space for a car. And so she showed us to her back garden, and as she was passing her back garden, I could have a look into the house. So it was like a nice house, but it just wasn't nice enough to have a Tesla parked outside. And the reason I say it wasn't nice enough to have a Tesla parked outside is because I know what, like how people buy houses in the UK, and to be honest, like it's just been completely normalized. Like 99% of people buy their homes, if they haven't inherited it from family members, they buy their homes on debt. They have a mortgage over their houses. And typically people in the UK, I forget what the average age is to get on the property market, but it's something like late 20s, early 30s, maybe even mid 30s at this rate. And so because she was a young woman, like she was probably like, she's probably like 40 at the most. Like at the most, she was 40. Because she's a young woman and her husband is young, and I could tell they're like a young couple, a relatively young couple. I knew that they haven't paid off their mortgage, and they live in a really nice part of town, part of London as well. So I can make deductions of how much like the average property on that road would have been. And so I know with almost like certainty level, like conviction, that they haven't paid off their mortgage. They probably have the bulk of their mortgage yet to pay off. And so what that means is you are paying for a car that's like 50 to 60,000 pounds in the UK. Actually, no, it's like 40 to 50,000 in the UK, which corresponds with being between $50,000 to $65,000. That's a lot of money to spend on discretionary spending when you probably have a mortgage outstanding of like £500,000 in debt. So for me, like in my mind's eye, if you still have like huge amounts of debts, you cannot afford to like spend like almost 10%, if not more, on discretionary spending, because that's 40, 50, 60,000 pounds they spent on that car. They clearly could have just gotten a cheaper car and devoted the balance that they would have spent on the Tesla on paying off that mortgage. And they would have been off a lot better because they would have paid off that mortgage sooner. They would have not accumulated as much interest. And also they would have gotten the sense of freedom that comes from owning your property outright sooner than they otherwise will. Now, in a nutshell, what I'm saying is the context doesn't match like their spending. Like in the case I described of the taxi driver who's bought a Tesla that is clearly way outside his means, as demonstrated by his like sheer anxiety, honestly, at you potentially like scratching his car or banging the door too hard when you exit and enter. Or for example, the people who buy like everyday household items that are way outside like their spending means or their budgets or what should be their budgets. It's like the context doesn't match their lives. It's manifesting differently in different socioeconomic groups, but it's essentially a symptom of the same thing. Like people using stuff to communicate something about themselves to the rest of the world. And I say it's to the rest of the world or it's for other people, because I guarantee you, if they lived in a different neighborhood, they wouldn't buy that car. And when we were driving up and down that road and we were trying to find the initial house, we saw like, I'm going to say like 10 Teslas on that road. Now, it's not a coincidence that there are 10 Teslas on that particular road. And that's because people are clearly trying to keep up with the Jonases. Is it Jonases or Johnsons? I think it's Johnsons. They're clearly trying to keep up with the Johnsons, if you will. And so the car is a symbol that says, one, I fit in. Two, I'm also the same income bracket or income level as you. And therefore, I matter or I'm as important or as powerful as you are. It's clearly not about the car. Like the car is a replacement for something else, and that replacement is for those adjectives that I just described. And the fact that it's present in all those driveways tells you that everybody's trying to make sure that they're not the odd one out, that they're not the one who is of less value as compared to their neighbors. And I would say like a lot of people find it like a vulnerable place to be in to admit that the reason why they're spending in a particular way is as a status symbol to make themselves feel important. So what they'll do is that they'll often couch it in other reasons. So in the case of Tesla, just because that's what we're talking about here, they will say, for example, that the reason why they buy Teslas or the reason why the high price tag is justifiable is because in the long term, it's cheaper in terms of like the cost of petrol versus the cost of electricity. And then secondly, they say like the quality is better. And then they also say like outside the cost and quality that it's good for the environment. So it's essentially like a virtuous form of spending. If you could buy any other car, why not buy the Tesla? Because it uses technology that means it doesn't rely on fossil fuels. Now you can easily show that those claims are untrue when you consider firstly the cost. Like the upfront cost is one super super high, but also there's loads of other associated costs that Tesla owners like say they didn't realize were connected to the vehicle. So the repair costs are outrageous because there are relatively few parts they can get from other manufacturers, and the lead time to get those repairman pieces are very, very long. The insurance is also significantly higher than average cars or other cars. And on top of the initial cost and the repair costs and the insurance costs that are connected to Teslas, they also experience like one of the highest forms of depreciation, meaning that the minute you drive them off the lot, they lose like way more of their value, like proportionally. Like any car, any new car that you buy, you drive it off the lot and it's automatically lost like 30, 40, 50%. And the longer or the more miles you have on it, obviously the higher the rate of depreciation. Teslas are unique in that their depreciation value is significantly higher than the normal or other cars. So it's not actually about the costs because other cars are cheaper in all these other areas. It also clearly is not about the quality. Like over the weekend, maybe it's just my algorithm because I clearly have made my hatred of Teslas and Elon known to the algorithm, but I came across these videos where these men, like, they damage test cars, like different types of cars. So they basically say, we're going to try our very hardest to damage this car to see how much damage the car can take or to see how quickly the car disintegrates. And then the longer or the more effort it takes to like damage a particular car, it means that the car is more resilient. And the quicker it's damaged means obviously the lower or the less resilient it is. If you've seen anything about the Cybertruck or even other Tesla cars, you will know that they are notoriously easy to destruct. There's like this one actually funny video online of like Elon, this was like a few years ago, like talking about how the Cybertruck is bulletproof and that even a rock, if you threw it at it, wouldn't go through the car. So he has this demonstration of a cyber, he's on stage and he's speaking to an audience, and to demonstrate that point, he takes a rock that his people have given him and he's like, watch, if I throw this at the window, it's not even gonna like make it even the tiniest of dents. He throws the rock at the Cybertruck window and it like goes through the vehicle. It smashes the window. So there's like loads of people online anyway who try and show you how easily destructible Tesla vehicles are. Not just the windows, not just the Cybertruck, but like literally every facet. In this one video where the guys were like testing the destructibility of Teslas, they literally just peeled off the dashboard, like the metal that outlines like the windows, they just peeled it off because all they've done is stuck it down with glue. Or with the car, they just banged it. They banged it really hard with one arm and that was enough to break the door. Whereas with other vehicles, it can withstand being banged like that at much greater impact, like much harder, like thousands of times before that same level of damage happens. So in terms of like quality, and also there's also stuff online about poor suspension or poor functionality in ice or cold weather, or just like the low mileage that you can get from per charge, there's all kinds of evidence out there that in terms of quality, there are other cars at the same price point and lower price points that are better quality. So people who say they spend money on Teslas for the quality, that's just clearly, demonstrably not true. The final claim they make about spending on Teslas is that it's environmentally friendly or it's ethical. But we all know now, certainly, that electric vehicles as a whole, as like in general, but also as well as Teslas, they rely on using battery minerals that they source by literally pillaging the earth, like mostly in the Congo. And that has resulted in hundreds of thousands of deaths directly attributable or directly connected to the mining of these minerals. So in terms of like making an ethical consumption choice or making a choice that is based on environmental factors, like they are destroying the environment in the Congo. They're using slave labor. It's resulting in genocide. They also have to pillage the earth to get those minerals, and that destruction happens over and over again. And to top it all off, it's not as though like the batteries last forever. The batteries have to be replaced every few years. So you can't repair them, which means you have to go through the process of pillaging the earth and exploiting people's labor to get those minerals. So it's clearly not about the environmental factors, and it's not about the ethical consumption factors. And also BTW, people who are genuinely concerned about the environment and concerned about ethical consumption, you will typically see that reflected in all the other choices or in many of the other choices that they make, like in life, you know? So you're not going to make an ethical claim in one area, but then be wearing like slave labor clothes. Like those two things don't tend to go together. Usually people who are conscientious about those things, it'll reflect in how they live their lives in other areas. I have found with Tesla owners that usually that ethical claim, that ethical consumption claim is only connected to the vehicle and it's not reflected in their everyday choices and their everyday life, which means that that claim is not true. So it clearly isn't about the ethical consumption, because a quick Google online will show you all the various ways in which Tesla is directly implicated in human rights violations and the exploitation of the earth and people. So again, it isn't because it's more cost effective. It isn't because the quality is better. It isn't because it's an ethical consumption choice. Now, literally the only thing left on the table, therefore, is that people choose it because it's a status symbol. It's an expensive car that most people can't afford. And by owning that car, it communicates how you are more well off or wealthier, or that you can afford this vehicle. It's a way of humble bragging your wealth without having to be crass enough to say, I'm really wealthy, you know. That's what status symbols are. It's like, I tell you how well off I am by the things that I put on my body, the things I choose to adorn myself with, or the things that I own, the things that I possess. So mark my words, like the Tesla is a perfect representation of status symbols and of people using the stuff that they have to communicate to the outside world their value in all kinds of ways. And not just to pick on people in that socioeconomic bracket, like it's not just like cars that people use. Like in everyday life, like you probably know people who are like young people or people who aren't on a lot of money, but they'll own like lots of designer clothes. Like they'll own, I don't even know what young people designer clothes are, but one of the things I see is like kids who can't afford like the higher end items in like a designer's like line, clothesline, if you will. So they can't afford the leather jacket. Not that you should be wearing leather, but they can't afford the leather jacket, or they can't afford the trousers. They can't afford like the more expensive items. So instead what they'll do is that they'll own the t-shirt. So they'll own a t-shirt that says Prada on it, or they'll own a t-shirt that says Gucci on it. So it's a way of sort of communicating the value by being associated with a brand that is expensive to buy. And therefore, by wearing said brand or wearing even like the cheapest item in that brand, you can still say as a young person, like, you know, I matter, or I'm important, or I'm valuable because I can afford to buy a Prada t-shirt or a Prada top or a Gucci Prada, whatever designer like kids wear. Also, by the way, this reminds me of the trend like a while ago where women would wear, like they would just wear like just their everyday clothes or non-expensive clothes, but they will like wear a Gucci belt or a Prada belt or a Chanel belt. I think it was more like Chanel belt. And it was like an embodiment of that, basically. It's like a way of showing the world like subtly, like I have money and therefore I matter. And the thing that gets me about designer clothes in particular is like, you know that they know that what they're selling is status, especially for like, I want to say like lower level, to be honest, even higher level, but in particular, like mid-range designer clothes, you know that they know that they're selling status to you because the quality of their fabrics are often very poor. Like one of the things that, like one of my pet peeves is when you pick up an item that's expensive, let's say you pick up a blouse and the blouse is like £200 or I don't know, $250, something like that. And then what I always do de facto, because I've got a thing about polyester, is I will go and look at the label and it'll say that it's polyester. And I will think to myself, the gall of these people to put a price tag on something that is literally like 100% polyester when it has cost them next to nothing to produce. And also the materials are trash, not like symbolically or metaphorically trash, like they are literally trash. Because when you're making polyester, they like have arrangements with local councils to give them first dibs of the trash they collect from people's homes and the trash they collect from the streets. So they separate the trash into stuff that can't be recycled and stuff that can be recycled. So all the plastics typically, unless they can't, because some of them can't be, if they can be recycled, they go into the blue bin. In the UK, it's a blue bin for the recycling. In some places, it's the green bin for recycling. But here, it's a blue bin. So all the plastics that are in the blue bin, they end up being sold to manufacturing companies that manufacture polyester. So they take that trash, literal trash, from our blue bins, from the streets that have been put into blue bins, and they wash it. They clean it, they treat it, and then they separate it into different colors. So there'll be the clear plastics, there'll be the blue plastics, the green plastics, brown plastics, whatever. And then they melt it all down according to the colors. They melt it all down at different temperatures, and then they weave it through a process of cooling and weaving. They weave it into fibers, into like threads, if you will. And then they end up using those threads to manufacture that $250 blouse. So when I say they have literally, it has cost them nothing because they have taken trash from the streets and from our homes, and they've manufactured it through very simple processing, by the way. It's not particularly sophisticated. They melt it down and make it into fibers and make our blouses. And then the thing that has cost them nothing to produce, next to nothing to produce, using very simple technology, they end up selling it to us at like crazy prices. Now, the companies, the Chanels of the world, the Hugo Bosses of the world, the Pradas of the world that sell these items for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, even sometimes thousands of dollars, knowing how little it costs them to produce, they know they can do that because they know the people who are buying their clothes, they're buying their clothes that are low quality in the sense that it's made of polyester or rayon or all these other like synthetic fibers that are based on using trash to manufacture. They know that people are only buying it because of the status. They know that people want to be associated with their brands. They want to be able to show that they're wearing like X designer clothes. And so they know that those people are willing to pay through the nose to have that brand on their bodies. So you know that it's not about the quality. You know it's not about the durability of these clothes, because a lot of it, especially now, because they figured out that trick that people will still buy it even if it is polyester or other synthetics, because they figured that out and because they know clearly that people are buying it because of the brand association, they are able to charge like predatory rates because they know they can prey on people's insecurities. And also as an aside, when it comes to polyester, not only is it just like inherently poor quality because of the material it's made of, it's also like really like bad for you in the sense that one, literally anything, any sweat that you get in a polyester top or blouse is going to be there forever. That's a forever sweat stain. That's a forever sweat smell. It's next to impossible to get out that smell. Even if you were to melt it back down and like rebuild it up again, that sweat is forever ingrained in that material. That's why like if you sweat in a polyester blouse, it's pretty much ruined. Secondly, if you wear polyester underwear, like I'm telling you, you need to stop now. Like you can go, and that's one thing that annoys me. You can go to like Agent Provocateur, for example, that sells really beautiful lingerie, like beautiful lace looking lingerie, but it'll be crazy prices. It'll be like £300 for a balcony bra or like £150 for a pair of underwear. Guess what that underwear is made of? It's made of polyester. So if you're wearing polyester underwear, I tell you for free, especially as a woman, you're not letting your junk breathe, okay? And my siblings like laugh when I say this all the time, but it's like, that's like the worst thing you can do for yourself. In terms of like your own like hygiene and health, that material doesn't breathe. So you're wearing materials that don't breathe all day long. What's going to happen is you're not going to smell fresh. You're not going to smell fresh. And it also may contribute to like infections and things. So the best thing you can do for yourself is go back to wearing like cotton underwear and cotton clothes, because you're able to breathe and it's better for your body. And also some of these materials literally seep into your skin. Like they have like negative health consequences even outside them trapping bacteria and them like not allowing air to breathe. Like believe me, polyester is honestly, in my eyes, it's like the worst thing you can wear. But outside sort of like Teslas and designer clothes, like other things that people use, like in popular culture that people use to signify their status, I guess, if you will, is like, even when you think about like rappers, probably less so now, but I remember in the mid-2010s, like growing up, and I was watching music videos because me and my siblings used to like spend all hours vegetating in front of the TV watching music videos. And literally every rapper would have like a massive gold chain, like a ridiculously large chain. And the reason why, like, not in the like in the 80s, when I look at old videos of the 80s, that's even more ridiculous. Like, it'll be like the size of a head. Like, the chains will be like a size of a pendant that's the size of a head on their chest. So they got smaller, but they were still like massively oversized. I even went to see 50 Cent perform in Portugal at this festival called Afro Nation a couple of years ago. And one, he looked so good. Like, he smelled good. He looked great. Like, he was a very good performer. And his voice quality sounded exactly the way it does on a record. And also, he performed the whole time sober because he's teetotal. And he just did a phenomenal job. I would say, like, he killed it. He killed it. And I was surprised because I had very low expectations of 50 Cent. I won't lie to you. But anyway, even with 50 Cent, he was wearing like a massive chain, you know. But I will say, clearly, the more successful he has gotten and the longer he's been successful, like, the chains kind of have become smaller. And that's probably because he probably has had less of a need or a desire to prove how important and valuable he is by having a ridiculously large, like gold and diamond pendant on his chest. So caricatures of people trying to show their wealth or signify their status or importance or the fact that they matter is like when you think of like old school rappers and how large their chains were, or like in everyday life, like how people will use jewelry to communicate their wealth, like people who will have massive engagement rings as though diamonds are expensive. They're not expensive, they're just artificially made expensive by restricting the supply. I might do an episode on this, actually. My partner's like super fascinated with De Beers and how they created that idea of a diamond is forever, while simultaneously, like, they have hundreds of thousands of diamonds, if not millions of diamonds. Actually, it is millions of diamonds in their vaults. And they intentionally keep them in the vaults because they know if they allow those diamonds to go into the market, it obviously drives down the price of diamonds. So for their own benefit, they would rather sell like a million diamonds every year than have 10 million diamonds flooding the market, because ultimately they would make less money at a net level, at a gross level. So anyway, like, people use jewelry as well in their everyday life, or they'll use things like, if they can't afford expensive jewelry, they might use like expensive holidays, to the point where you will get people who have never skied, can't ski, aren't able to ski, but they'll go on a skiing holiday because they know that wealthy people go on skiing holidays. And so if they're at the same place that wealthy people are, even if they can't ski, then they'll be rich by association, or they'll be perceived as rich online because they were on a ski holiday, and they'll tell themselves they can learn to ski there. But realistically, it takes years to learn to ski. It's a skill that people usually start skiing when they're children. So again, going on a ski holiday when you can't ski and you probably don't even like the cold, they're only doing it because of the status that holiday gives them. So in all kinds of ways, all the time, everywhere we look, at different socioeconomic levels, people are clearly using the stuff that they possess as a way of reflecting value onto themselves. So then the next question is this, like, is there anything inherently wrong per se about using stuff to communicate value? And there is, and it isn't like a moral thing or like an ethical thing. It isn't, you know, I've spoken about like the unethical practices that Tesla uses in producing their batteries, or using their slave labor, or even everyday consumer choices that we make that aren't good because they hurt other people in the environment. I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about from a basic level. It's not good to use the stuff that you own as a status symbol, because it's conceding the lie that you only matter if you own things, or that you need to own things to matter, or that things that you own can reflect value onto you. It's like, it's accepting a false premise. It's accepting a lie that is self-defeating. You are going to feel bad about yourself if you even buy into the lie that you only exist if you consume, or you only matter if you buy things, or that you need to add anything onto your personhood to matter or to have value or to be deserving of love and respect and affection and connection. When you use status symbols, when you use things to communicate value or to make yourself feel valuable, it's a problem because you've accepted that lie. You're internalizing that lie that you are not enough. And the thing is, you don't have to own anything to matter. Like, you don't have to do anything to deserve to be treated with kindness, with gentleness, with respect. You don't have to own anything or possess anything to be worthy of being heard or seen or counted. You don't have to own things or give people things or give people experiences to be deserving of love, of affection, of romance, of thoughtfulness, of kindness, or people wanting to spend time with you. It's like, those things are your birthright. And by birthright, I mean by virtue of you being alive, having been lucky enough to exist and being here, you deserve all those things. And so when you're using these status symbols to make yourself, to make you like matter in the eyes of other people, it's only harmful to you and your psyche and your well-being, mental well-being, because you're reinforcing the lie. You're reinforcing the lie that these things define who you are. They define your character. They define your worthiness. So when you accept that premise, it's honestly a downward spiral. And what I mean by downward spiral is that when you accept that false premise or you accept that falsehood, ironically, like, the people in your life and the things that happen to you, like, reinforce that lie. And what I mean by that is, like, realistically, because we live in a world where, like, they have tried really hard to make us accept that money is the most important thing to have, that money defines us. And because in, like, realistic terms, money does define our existence. Like, if you have money, you get to live a happier, more comfortable life. If you don't have money, you're going to struggle a lot more. And so money does have, like, a material impact on our lived experiences. But it has also taken on, like, a, like, I would say, like, a godlike status, in the sense that I personally genuinely believe that we worship money. And you can tell that we worship money because, to use, like, a religious phraseology, is we create, like, false idols in a way. We create, like, mini gods in our everyday life. So if you consider, like, the status of celebrities, you can't tell me they're not gods by everything but name. Like, the way that people will worship them, like, they will see, like, a famous celebrity or a famous person and they will lose their marbles. Like, you know, like, they will be screaming, they will be like, they will put themselves on the ground basically and, like, adore them and give them all these compliments and do anything to be in their presence and, like, ask for pictures and ask for, like, a somebody for them to write on a piece of paper just so they can have a little piece of them and walk away with a piece of their signature. Or they will post a picture of them with a celebrity online, and that will be, like, the thing that they pin, the thing that defines, like, their social media presence. Or, like, in more sort of sad, sinister ways, like, they will give themselves sexually to these strangers. Like, the women, the groupies, the men who are groupies, who will have sex with, like, these disgusting music stars who literally are plagued with STDs because they have sex so frequently with so many people, often unprotected. And I know this, by the way, because I've read lots of salacious books about, like, celebrity sex. This one by this woman called Brittany Rainer, I think that's her name. And she was talking about how, like, women, like, these influencers, Instagram models, will get mass texts from, like, famous singers, like, rappers, artists, people like Drake, which is, actually the kernels of my original dislike for Drake came through this. And they will say like, hey, hi, I'm having a party. Why don't you bring a few of your friends to the party? They'll go to the party and all the party is them having sex with them. Like, and not just like sex with condoms, because hey, who am I to like judge consenting adults engaging in adult behavior? They will have sex with these women, often without condoms, because that's what they want, the men. And then they will just like throw them some handbags or a little bit of jewelry or a little bit of money and like send them on their merry ways. And the only reason why those women are willing to put themselves in those positions to be exploited and degraded and used by these men who are, as I said, like riddled with diseases for not much more than just having the bragging rights of having been sort of like used by them is because we worship money. Like if we didn't worship money, what would they gain by being associated with somebody who is powerful because they have money? Nothing. So the root of them willing to essentially like degrade themselves is clearly connected to the fact that they worship money and they're willing to sacrifice themselves at the altar of money just so that they can be associated with somebody who has money. And that's also the case when it comes to like other celebrities that we worship for no reason, not because they give us like great art, not because they give us like pieces of work that changes the way that we think, the way that we relate with the world, the way we understand things. They're not giving us any of that. I tell you for free, Kim Kardashian and her clan of family is not giving us anything worthwhile, nothing that has changed humanity or moved humanity forward. The reason why we worship them and we're willing to give them like our attention, our time, and buy the things that they say that they use is because we hope that we can almost like by association have a little bit of their lifestyle, and that lifestyle is the lifestyle of having money essentially. And again, like I was saying, like the reason why it's bad to try and get value through all these other channels, like through the association of celebrities, through buying the things that they sell us because they tell us we can be more like them if we buy those things, or in all the other various ways that I've said, whether it's buying the holidays you can't afford or buying the cars you can't afford or buying the clothes you can't afford. The reason why it's not productive or it's self-defeating is because it's accepting a lie that is self-perpetuating once you accept it. If you accept the fact that you don't have value unless you put these things on your body or you put these things into your life, then it means you accept the premise that you don't value or you aren't of value if you don't have those things. And then I think the second point actually I was making before I got derailed by my own thoughts was that, that's right, I was taught, it was that it's self-perpetuating in the sense that the people, because we all worship money, you are actually going to get positive feelings by trying to feel important through the things that you own. So I would imagine for people who own Teslas, they do get a lot of intrigue. They do get a lot of people looking at them and thinking, wow, like this person can own like a 50,000 pound car. What do they do for a living? Or assumptions about their wealth status in the positive sense, like this person must be successful, this person must be very clever because they're successful, this person must be maybe good at business, or maybe they studied finance, maybe they studied law, maybe they did like an important profession, quote unquote. This person probably has a very good lifestyle, probably has a good life. So it's like they get the status symbol to make themselves feel important. And we as a society, because we worship money and people who have money, they get that validation. We do make them feel important because we are intrigued when we see people who have expensive things or expensive lifestyles or things that cost a lot of money. And so it reinforces the idea that if they didn't have those status symbols, they wouldn't be worthy of being looked at, or they wouldn't be worthy of getting attention or people taking an interest in them, or even people wanting to spend time with them and wanting to be around them. So again, it puts you in the trap where you initially did something because you wanted to feel important, but then that thing did kind of give you importance, but it now means that you can only feel important by continuing to engage in that behavior in this case being like consumerism essentially, or that behavior being feeling like you need to like adorn yourself and your life with things, with material things. And the thing about this, like, reinforcing mechanism is that it's not only hurting the person who is creating in their psyche a dependence on things because those things make them feel valuable or makes them feel like they matter or makes them feel like they are important. It's also hurting the people who validate them. So for people who also worship money and therefore worship people with money, when they see the Tesla driver and they're like, wow, like, you own a Tesla, you must be X, Y, and Z, and they like adore them or they worship them, like in a micro way or in a smaller way, they kind of give them the same kind of treatment that celebrities get, that treatment of like worshiping essentially the holder of that money because they have money, because we worship money. So when you are that person who is giving that adoration, it's hurting you as well, because you yourself are reinforcing the notion that that person is important or valuable or matters because they own stuff, and you're giving them that validation because you also believe those same thoughts, which means that when you see them drive away in their Tesla and you've given them that validation, like, wow, they must be so successful, or they must be so intelligent, or they must be, insert whatever thing you assume about people who have money, it, the reverse must be true. It must mean that you don't matter or aren't as valuable or aren't value or don't have value or aren't important or aren't powerful or aren't worthy of attention because you don't have the Tesla or you don't have the expensive holidays or you don't have the jewelry or the massive engagement ring or you don't have, insert all these like material trappings. Like, it's a double wound. It's hurting the person who has the status symbol and it's hurting the person who's validating the person who has the status symbol. So it's literally hurting all of us. Now, the final thing I wanted to talk about was, you know, when I was thinking about longer term, like, I was thinking about, like, what does it look like in our everyday life when you have spent a lifetime trying to use these things to make you feel like you matter or to make you feel like you should be seen and heard and counted? Like, what does a life of somebody who does like that, like, their whole lives look like? And I think the first thing is a situation that a lot of us find ourselves in. And that's the fact, or really like the misery of living paycheck to paycheck. Because when you spend a lifetime trying to use stuff in your life to make you feel valuable or make you feel like you matter, then it's a bottomless pit. Like, nothing you consume will ever satisfy that, because that's not the solution. The solution isn't to consume more. And so if you keep consuming, the desire is to keep on going, because each time you get a temporary high. So each time you buy like a designer outfit and somebody's like, wow, you look good, or wow, that those jeans look great, or wow, you can afford that item, it gives you like a temporary high. And so you try to recreate that high by constantly buying things that give you like a little hit of endorphins, or a little rush of excitement because you're able to buy things and validate the idea that you can spend money, and because you can spend money, you kind of matter, or because you can put expensive things in your life or on your body that you matter. So you're trying to chase that high. And so you're going to use the Pay in 3 apps. You're going to use the PayPal Pay in 3. You're going to use the Klarna Pay in 3 to buy things you can't afford, because again, you're chasing this high all the time. And what that means is that when you are always consuming, because you're not producing, essentially, like, it would be different if you're producing, but if you're working for somebody, you aren't producing, you are helping that business owner produce. So the businesses are producing. So each time you go into work, you're making them money and they are being productive. So they are creating things. And so if a business consumes, it's okay, because they are producing stuff all the time. They are producing things that earns them money. And so the key is to make sure they produce more than they consume. Otherwise, obviously, they're in trouble. But that's not the experience of the average person. The average person is an employee. They go and they clock in at their job at different socioeconomic levels, no matter what that looks like. You're doing the same things. You have different titles, but you're doing the same thing. You're exchanging your time and labor for money. But you're not producing things for yourself. And so what that means is, if you get sucked into the trap, as a lot of us are, trap of always
feeling like you have to buy new clothes, you have to buy new shoes, you have to go on holidays like 2-3 times a year, you have to buy the latest appliances, you have to update your phone every other year, or if not every year, you have to buy all this makeup even though the old makeup is still there, you have to go out to dinner all the time, otherwise it's like you don't get that high of being out, or you don't get that endorphin rush of being able to photograph yourself at various expensive restaurants. If you get trapped in that cycle of spending, spending, consuming, consuming, it means by definition, you're not putting money aside for a rainy day. You're not putting money aside for retirement. You're not putting money aside for like just like walking away money, like the money that you're supposed to pile up. That means that even though you have to work at any given moment, if work should start to abuse you, if you should start to experience sexual harassment in the workplace or racial bullying in the workplace or bullying just based on other factors in the workplace or just being subject to like a boss that is emotionally abusive, you can basically be like, screw you, I'm leaving. You're supposed to have a pile of money where you can afford to walk away for like a year, 2 years, and still be able to afford your lifestyle. And so when you are spending on a daily basis or on a regular basis and you're stuck in that downward spiral of just consuming for consumerism's sake because you're trying to get that those good vibes or good feelings or those feelings of importance that comes from consumption, it means the cost, the price you pay is you're not putting away safety money. You're not saving money. You're always at the whim of your employer and fearing losing your job because you never get the satisfaction of you never get that feeling of like, okay, I've consumed enough now. Now I can just focus on my other responsibilities, i.e. to save money. You never get that satisfaction because that's the nature of consumption when you're trying to fill that pit, that bottomless pit of trying to feel important. So that's the first thing. You live paycheck to paycheck. And actually, before I move on from this point, I neglected to say one of the pernicious thing as well is that when you get trapped in the cycle of trying to use like a status symbol, like a Tesla or any other thing, whether it's jewelry or designer clothes or whatever it is, when you get sucked into that trap of using status symbols to make you feel important or like you matter or you're like you have like worth, those things are never in isolation. That's the problem. It's not like somebody who owns a Tesla can own a Tesla and just live in like an average house. It's like, no. They now have to buy the lifestyle that goes with somebody who would own a Tesla. Their house, the house that they live in, the house that they choose to buy needs to reflect the fact that they own a Tesla. So they have to buy a house in a more expensive part of town. Otherwise, again, like it looks funny or it doesn't make sense to like the people they're comparing themselves to. You now also have to buy certain clothes. Like, what does the owner of a Tesla wear? They probably aren't shopping in Primark or Penney's, which is like, if you don't know Penney's, it's the clue is in the name Penney's. You know, it's very, very cheap clothing. You can buy like 5 pairs of underwear for like £3 or like 10 pairs of socks for like £2, which is, you know, why it's good to get your socks from Penney's. But anyway, the status symbol doesn't come in isolation. Like, you have to buy all the trappings that go with that status symbol. It's the clothes that you wear. It's where you now have to go and eat. You know, maybe you can't be caught dead eating at McDonald's or eating at just like regular places. You now have to go to like high-end places because that's where the other people who own Teslas go to eat. You now can't just send your kid. You can't be living on a street where like a lot of your neighbors have Teslas. And a lot of your neighbors, therefore, like, send their kids to a private school that costs, like, £20,000 a semester. And then you're going to go and bus your kid to, like, a school that is free or costs, like, very little or is, like, not in a nice part of town. You're going to be, again, the odd one out. So you will feel like you now have to send your kid to, like, an expensive school so that you can live up to the lifestyle you have created by buying this status symbol. It'll also affect the holidays that you can go on. It'll also affect, by the way, your interpersonal relationships, because if you are somebody like who has defined themselves by the things that they own, that also is going to trickle down in how you show love and how you receive love. So now you feel like the way that you show love to the people that you care about is by buying them expensive stuff. So if my partner had a Tesla and it's my birthday and they spend like 30 pounds on me or 50 pounds on me or even 100 pounds on me, I would think, wow, like they clearly don't love me, because they can afford to buy a 50,000 pound car, but they can't even afford to, they're not even willing, shall we say, to spend 50 or 100 pounds on me on my birthday. So it affects your interpersonal relationships now. Now you have to buy them something that reflects somebody who reflects the value of the kinds of gifts that somebody who owns a Tesla would buy. Same with your children as well. How does it look to your children, like living in this fancy neighborhood, in this fancy house, driving a fancy car, and then like for Christmas, you're just buying them a couple of cheap items? No, now you have to buy them expensive things as well. You have to send them on expensive trips and buy them expensive gadgets, because again, you are never able to buy the status symbol in isolation. You have to buy the things that go with it. A thing that just popped into my head actually is when it comes to women and women who buy expensive bags. Like if you buy like a bag that's like worth like 5,000 pounds or 10,000 pounds, let's say 5,000 pounds to keep it a bit more like down to earth. Not that that is down to earth, but let's say you spend $5,000 on a handbag. I guarantee you, you're going to feel like you need to spend a proportionate level on your nails. Like you're going to have expensive nails. You're going to feel like if you wear a weave, for example, you're going to feel like you can't just order your weave on Amazon or buy it from like the local hair shop, like the local Asian hair shops, which is usually Asian shops in the UK. You can't just go to your local hair shop and just buy like synthetic hair. You're going to feel like you need to spend like £1,000 plus on like human hair, because again, the hair has to go with the handbags. The handbags also have to match the level of the shoes and the nails, and also therefore the car, and therefore also the clothes. Again, it tends to be like a whole package that goes together. So you trap yourself because you're trying to use a status symbol to make you feel powerful, important, like you matter, or like you matter. And then what happens is you end up being trapped by that very item, because you feel propelled to buy all the other things that go with that lifestyle. Which is why, by the way, you will often see people at all various socioeconomic levels like experiencing financial difficulty. So like, how the hell can you tell me that Michael Jackson, despite the fact that he sold millions and millions and millions of records and made hundreds of millions of dollars, how did he die bankrupt? Or with Kanye West, who was bankrupt like last year or a couple of years ago, or like all these celebrities that like fall on hard times, or even in everyday life, people who lived lavish lifestyles, relatively speaking, who did go on those fancy trips, who did have those expensive clothes, who did have those cars. And then you see them like a few years later, once a recession happens or another like quote unquote market correction, and they lose their job or they lose their income, and then suddenly they're in massive financial duress because their lifestyle was bought on credit. And the reason why they had to buy that lifestyle in the first place is because they weren't able to just buy the status symbol in isolation. So again, like it traps you in all these different ways, not just because you can't like put away money for savings, but also because it's self-perpetuating, that it requires you to keep on spending. Another thing that I think happens when you spend a lifetime trying to feel important through the things that you own is you're going to end up prioritizing the wrong people in your life. Because if you are the kind of person who is trying to manufacture artificially that feeling of feeling worthy or worthwhile or valuable or important, you are only going to impress the people who also have that insecurity, who have that feeling that unless they are, you know, adorned in the things that say they have money, then they're not important. You're going to gravitate towards one another because only you as a group are going to be impressed by those things. And what that means is that on the one hand, yeah, like you're getting the validation that I spoke about earlier, in that they're interested in you because you have money. They want to spend time with you because they have money. They're happy to like invite you into their lives and share their life to a certain extent and be at your birthday parties and be like godparents to your children and go on holidays with you and like just generally spend time with you. They're willing to do that because they feel like you are a match with them financially, because of the things that you're able to buy. Like you, if you can afford a Tesla, then we can hang out essentially. Or if you can afford my lifestyle, then we are matched in that sense. And therefore we can be around each other. If you choose to surround yourself with those types of people, you get that validation by them being impressed by you because you're both impressed by money. But guess what? Like, they are the definition of like fair weather friends. If the only thing or the primary thing that brings you together is your love of money and the love of feeling powerful because you have money, then that means that they are unlikely to be the kinds of people who stick by you in hard times. Because unfortunately, these two things go together. The love of money and the hatred of the poor tend to go together, like I said in previous episodes, because you can't worship one without necessarily like denigrating the other. Like it just kind of goes together. It's one of those ugly symbiotic relationships. And so what means in terms of like interpersonal relationships that you form based on the fact that you have shared like economic backgrounds or in the same economic bracket or financial bracket, means that if you should fall out of that bracket, guess what? Like, they're gonna go back to seeing you as a peasant. Like, if they only like you because you have money and you can afford the same lifestyle that they can afford, and they're impressed by the fact that you have a certain lifestyle that they might perceive as being aspirational, then if God forbid you should lose any of that, then guess what? You're going to fall out of their good graces because they never liked you because of your character. They never saw the fact that you have value just because you have value, not because you own stuff. They never saw the fact that you are inherently valuable. And therefore, when you lose those trappings of wealth or trappings of money, when you lose that proximity to money, you're going to fall out with them as well. They're not going to like you as much. They're not going to hang out with you as much. They're not going to be there for you as much. And you can kind of see this played out in like famous people's lives, like Kanye West, where he clearly has chosen to surround himself with people who love his money. And I think certainly part of him like being who we know him to be now, like he's clearly suffers from bipolar disorder, and he has told us that himself in his lucid moments. But you can see really the destruction that his illness has caused on his life. But you can also see that clearly he's not surrounded by people who love him and care about him. Because if they did love and care about him, we would never have witnessed half the things that we have witnessed. Because they would have had him on medication for a very long time. They would have advised him in his lucid moments. They would have done anything in his power to protect him from himself. And to protect him from destroying the wealth that he spent like 25 years trying to create. And so I can only imagine that because he has chosen to surround himself with people who are impressed by him because he has money and like him and want to spend time with him because he has money, it's in their interest for him to not be well. Because presumably when he's not well, he's making financial decisions that benefit them more. They're able to financially exploit him more. They're able to get him to fund things more. They're able to have access to him in a way where in his clear thinking moments, they never would have access to, you know? So, like, other people don't experience that level of betrayal from the people around you in such public ways, but they certainly do experience it in smaller ways in everyday life. Like, they will see that when they lose their money, their fair weather friends will scurry away like rats leaving a sinking ship, because they never saw you. They didn't see your humanity. They didn't see your worth. They didn't see your value because they weren't interested in you. They were interested in you insofar as you have money and they worship money. And therefore, people who have money, they're willing to be around. But that's a very different proposition to actually being liked and loved by people just because of who you are. Outside investing in the wrong people, another consequence from a lifetime of using status symbols to like feel important or valuable is you end up like giving stuff instead of yourself to other people. So one of the things that comes, like if you feel like you need to own all these expensive things for you to feel valuable or to be seen as important by other people, like one of the sacrifices you make is that you're probably going to have to work a lot to be able to afford and keep on top of that lifestyle, especially because the lifestyle, as I've described earlier, is like it grows. It's like an incline. It's like you start out spending X, but you end up spending X plus Y as time goes by, because that's just the nature of having to keep up with that lifestyle, with that growing lifestyle. So instead of like, not only are you choosing poor people who are like poor people, like poor choices in people to surround yourself in, because you're choosing people who are impressed by money and therefore aren't going to be there for you in your moments of vulnerability, but you're also, for the people who do love you just for you in your life, you're probably like giving them stuff instead of yourself. So if you have to work all these extra hours or work extra long hours or be unavailable to your family because you're working to afford that lifestyle, then guess what? Like, instead of you giving like your partner quality time, you're probably just going to buy them something or give them a trip. Or instead of you being a parent that is engaged in their child's life, like, you know who their friends are, like, you know when they've got a game, you know, like the everyday politics of like their friendship groups, like, you know what their aspirations and hopes are for the future, you know if they've got a girlfriend or boyfriend, you know, like things about their love, you know, instead of you being truly engaged in your child's life and truly connected and truly feeling like, treating the child feeling like you're invested in them, you end up just like throwing stuff at them. Like, here's an iPhone, here's an Xbox, here's an expensive trip, here's the clothes that you wanted. And you use that as substitutes for love and quality time and affection, because you literally, one, have internalized the message that the way to show love is to give people things. You fundamentally accept that premise that that equals love. And I actually have an episode on mindless consumerism that I did way back then that you might want to check out. So you give them those things because you believe that consumerism equals love, that giving them things to consume equals love. But secondly, because you probably don't even have the time to be able to be truly invested in who they are as people, and therefore they're not going to feel connected to you. That's why a lot of children of very wealthy families, they walk away from those families when the time comes, and often they feel very disconnected from them because they feel like they didn't get to know their parents. They feel like their parents used money and things and stuff in lieu of the quality time, in lieu of seeing their children, of being engaged in their lives, of being like present and active in their lives. So another consequence of a lifetime of doing this stuff is you're giving stuff instead of giving yourself, because you think the stuff is more valuable when actually the people who love you for you think that you are more valuable than the stuff. And actually a lot of the like mental illnesses that come, that people from wealthy nations suffer from, is kind of connected to that. It's that disconnectedness that comes from like having all the stuff in your life and being able to give the people you love all the stuff, but fundamentally feeling disconnected from them, fundamentally feeling like you are not needed by them because you don't spend time with them, you're not seen by them, they don't see you, you don't see them. You lack that emotional intimacy that comes from being truly engaged in somebody's life. When you're busy trying to populate your life with stuff, you actually, ironically enough, don't feel closer to people. You feel further away because the stuff gets in between you, because you have internalized the idea that the way that you feel love is by either giving stuff or receiving stuff from other people. And usually that displaces things like conversing with people, like just having conversations, chatting with them, hearing about their thoughts and their inner workings and what they're going through and what they're thinking and how they're feeling. Like, engaging those kinds of behaviors are going to make you feel more connected to somebody than like buying them something expensive or giving them a very expensive activity. Like, those things can be nice too, but it can never replace the satisfaction and the connection that comes from just like engaging in one-to-one or like group connection, that of just like spending quality time and hearing and being heard by other people. And then the final thing I'll talk about here is one of the things as well that happens is you actually delude yourself through the use of the language. So because a lot of people are living way beyond their means, one of the things that I always pick up on is the language they use to justify these expensive status symbols. So they will make statements like, I'm investing in myself, or if I by buying these things, I'm investing in me, or this thing itself is an investment. And usually people say that when they're buying something that they clearly like cannot afford. Like, you know damn well you shouldn't be buying a new phone, but you're like, well, you know, I need to invest myself because I'm worthy of buying things for myself. Or let's say with clothes, like through these clothes, I can become a new person. So I'm investing in the future me by wearing these clothes now. Or with cars, like I will attract the right kind of person by owning this car. Or when it goes back to clothes again, like I need to communicate the right message to the people in my life if I want to attract other people who are wealthy or well off. So to justify these things that we buy, often we delude ourselves by using the language of investment, by using specifically the word I'm investing in myself or I'm investing in this, when clearly it's a fallacy. Like one of the ways in which you can tell it's a fallacy is if you like go through your house and you add up every single thing you've ever bought in your life, like all the stuff that's in your house, add up the value of it today and compare it to the value of the stuff that you bought it at. It's going to be worse. It's going to be less, worth less. You know, it's going to be, let's say you've bought 10,000 pounds worth of stuff in your house. By the time you throw in your furniture, your appliances, your clothes, the refurbishings, all that stuff. And it's, for most people, it's obviously a lot more. By the time you've added all that up, it probably costs you 10,000 pounds, but it's probably worth like 1,000 pounds. And sadly, that's because it has no resale value. So you know something is not an investment if it doesn't appreciate in value. And if most of the stuff that you have doesn't appreciate in value, in fact, it depreciates in value, that means that you are not in fact investing in yourself. You are just spending. You are just a spender. You're not an investor, you're a spender. It's an expense, it's a cost. There's no increase in value. Like the designer clothes that you bought, literally the minute you walk out of the store have lost like 70% of their value. And you know that because if you were to go and list them on eBay or Vinted or any of these like secondhand shops or online platforms, you're never going to recoup any of that value. You're going to recoup a very, 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 very small percentage of that value, which tells you that it's not an investment. Investment is something that you buy and it appreciates in value. Sometimes you can get that with like really rare watches, you know, like you'll buy the watch and then 50 years from now, it's worth more than originally. Or sometimes you get that with, well, obviously you get that with like financial investments if you make a good choice, in that you might buy, not that I'm endorsing you to buy Tesla stock because it is crashing, which I'm happy about. But let's say 5 years ago, you bought Tesla shares at like $30 per share. And as of like December, they were worth $488 a share. That's an example of an investment because it literally has appreciated in value. That doesn't apply for your clothes. That doesn't apply for your car. It doesn't apply for your shoes. It doesn't apply for your holidays. It doesn't apply for the things in your home. It doesn't apply for like 99% of the things that you consume. So it's better to not lie to yourself and call things investments when what you really mean is they're just expenditures. And I feel like when we're honest about the fact that these are just expenditures, these are just expenses, these are just costs, if we're honest by using honest language, by using non-self-deceptive language, it kind of like makes you realize like, oh my God, like I'm just throwing money away. Like I'm just engaged in reckless spending at this rate. And I feel like you've got more of a chance of being able to sort of escape the matrix of consumption a little bit, because one of the first ways they get you is by getting you to believe that this expenditure is justified. And the way you justify it, or one of the ways you justify it, is by calling it an investment. So you kind of reclaim some of that power by calling it what it is. Like usually it's mindless consumption, sometimes it's reckless consumption, but in all cases it's just pure expenditures. And not only is it just like flat out expenditures, in the case of the status symbols that I've been speaking about in this episode, and in general, the idea of using the stuff we own to communicate value to ourselves and to other people, not only is it not an investment, it also doesn't even achieve that aim. It doesn't imbue or endow you with value, or it doesn't make you matter. It doesn't make you have worth. It doesn't make you important. And actually, that's a good thing. That's a good thing, because if those things don't make you matter, it means that you are enough as you are. Like, you can come as you are. When you approach friendships, you as you are enough. Like, you don't have to try and impress them by buying them stuff or by showcasing how much you can consume or how much debt you can take on or how many expenses you can have in any given week or any given month. You can just like let your own personality shine. You can make connections based on the fact that you have things in common, you understand one another, you're invested in each other, you care about them, you like them. Same with your intimate relationships. Same when it comes to like investing in the right areas, i.e. investing in your friends and family, investing in like helping people in your community. Those things are going to reinforce the idea that you have value just because you exist, and you will feel less of a need to try and sort of like smear yourself with these materialistic things in an effort to feel important or to feel valuable, to feel like you've got some worth. So anyway, that's what I thought about this weekend when I went to collect that plant pot from that lady, and gave me an opportunity to reflect and marinate on my dislike for Tesla. But it did make me think about all this other stuff about the lengths we go to try and feel big and to try and feel powerful, to try and feel like we matter. So anyway, I'm going to wrap up this episode for this week. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you were able to listen to the very end and enjoyed the episode. If you had any thoughts you'd like to share with me, you know, I'd love to receive them. I have my email in the show notes. It's just offlinethoughts@gmail.com. Until next week, have a great week, and hopefully you will also try out gardening, because honestly it is so satisfying. Although, try and do it in a cost-effective way, because if you start buying everything from new, it can add up and cost very quickly. Enjoy the rest of your week and speak to you next Monday.